I feel like a lot of people, a lot of the churchy phrases that I've heard is not focusing that it's here and now. They just focus like, oh, it's coming soon. Like, get ready for that. Get ready to be taken from the ground. And I don't know. They make it sound a lot scarier. But I think that was a good way to remember that it's here and it's now, but also not yet.
And that's attention, right? So like, yeah, it's here. And the whole idea is like, don't get ready for what's coming. Like,
It's now.
Like, yeah. It's not about getting your life right so you're in line with what Jesus says so that you can go and be safe and there's no fire and brimstone. It's getting your life in line with God and living in like alignment with Him here, because you're going to live a better life, and it's the way you should do it. Like, it's the good way. It's the good life, right?
Welcome back to Ministry Reimagined. This episode, I was joined by Chap Prescott, a chaplain here at Andrews University, who never would have thought he would be working in ministry. In this episode, he talks about his perspective on calling and how he got his passion for ministry in the first place. How do people call you? Do people call you Chap Prescott, Chap Care? Is that your last name, Care?
Care is my last name, yeah.
Do you prefer one over the other?
I joke around like I'm like the Pope and Beyonce. I don't go by my last name. It's just Prescott.
Okay.
No last names. Really, it's just like, it's easier because most people can't pronounce the last name Care. They'll be like hair, car. So I just go by Prescott because it's easier. And then I'm not a titles person, never have been. I don't really mind if you just call me Prescott.
A part of me always feels wrong just calling people by their first name.
It's interesting because some people will like, they will start by calling me Chap Prescott, and then by the end of it, once we know each other, they'll drop it. And then others, they'll be like, yeah, Prescott. And then by the end, they'll be like, hey, Chap. It's like, hey, I don't know what changed along the way. I don't know if that's one's better than the other, but that's usually what happens.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So you don't prefer anything. It's just Prescott.
Yeah.
Chap.
Prescott's good. Yeah.
Beyonce.
Probably not that one. I don't know if I can take Queen Bee's title, but yeah. Do they still call her Queen Bee? I'm not also like a pop culture person. I don't know.
I think that's a good question. I'm pretty sure. I think very rarely people call her Queen Bee.
Okay.
But I think it's just Beyonce.
Yeah. So you like, I have no idea.
Fair enough. Well, hello, Chap Prescott. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be on the podcast.
I'm very glad. Instead of asking you the normal question of, hey, how would you introduce yourself? I want to know from your close friends, what are three things that they would say about you?
I never call them enough. And I don't talk about myself enough. I always ask them questions about what they're doing, what they're up to. That's probably the main two. Like, they would probably just say those things and then just say it over and over and over. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm thinking about one specific friend. So I have one specific friend. And so I will, like, if I have a long drive, I'll call them. And I'll go through the list and like, they never pick up. This is like me putting them on blast. But there's one specific friend, however, that if I call him every single time, he'll pick up and be like, Prescott, are you okay?
Oh.
And I'm just like, I am. I was just calling to check in. He's like, okay. I was worried because you never talked to me. And I look back at my phone and like every single call that we've had, it was like me reaching out to him. And so I don't know if it's true, but that's what they would say about me.
That it's always them, you calling them.
No, they'd always say that I don't call them and that we don't talk, but yeah.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Okay. What are three things that people that know you wouldn't know about you?
Like how deep are we want to go with that? I mean,
that's up to you, but let's go.
So I grew up in Atlanta and I loved the Atlanta Braves as a kid.
Okay.
So the baseball was like my sport. I loved watching it. I loved playing it. My dad and I would like go back in the backyard and play catch for hours. And, I would, listen to every game. So my parents had this thing where they were like, you can't watch TV super late at night and baseball games go late. So I would sneak a radio and I would put it under my pillow and I would listen to every single game.
Wow.
1 year they did not win when we all expected them to win. And so I stopped watching them for years, but I was still like a Braves fan of the heart. I was just really hurt by them. They won the World Series a couple years ago. And so that love has been renewed. And now every so often, like I'll catch games and listen to scores.
Do you ever think that you could have made it big back
in
the day?
Definitely not good enough. Like, not even close.
Fair enough. What are some other things that people might not know about you?
So recently my family has gotten chickens.
Like,
and
pets?
Kind of, yeah. So my daughter, my oldest daughter, loves chickens. She had, we went over to some people's houses, and she got to hold some chickens, and then ever since then, she's loved chickens. And so we got some chickens for her. So I'm not a farmer. I grew up in the suburbs, but we now have chickens. And so we take care of those chickens. And she plays with them every day.
Wow. What are you going to do once they die? Are you going to... Maybe that's a bad question to ask.
I mean, we don't ever think about those things.
Right. I'm so sorry.
Chickens.
Do you guys eat chicken?
No, I'm mostly vegetarian. Like, huh. Yeah, on a rare occasion, I'll eat meat at like a good Indian restaurant, and that's usually it. But yeah.
That's, I never understood that. How are people like vegetarian most of the time and then just eat it sometimes?
So like I'm South Asian. My dad's family's from Bangladesh. And so I have like really good memories of his relatives coming over and making really good food that wasn't vegetarian. Mm. And so if I eat meat, it's like that, and it reminds me of that. But okay. Other than that, I'm like vegetarian because meat kind of grosses me out.
Oh, so it's a personal choice.
It's
not like related to religion at all.
For me, no. Yeah.
Okay.
For some people, I mean, like I was raised in an Adventist family that was vegetarian, so I guess that's probably like, you know.
That's
had
fair.
Something to do with it. Not for me.
Okay. And see, I'm learning more about you already. When we're talking about ministry, I want to make sure that we define what it actually is to make sure that we're talking about the same thing. How would you define ministry?
Yeah, good question. It takes a ton of different shapes and forms, but its essence, it is I think about like specifically like Christian ministry, and like I come from an Adventist Christian background, right? Yeah. Like been a church pastor, been in education for a while, and I think about ministry in those contexts because that's what I've done, right? And I think about it, it's like it's one person either bringing Jesus or being Jesus for someone else at some time, and that could be either like, I mean, it takes the form like training in sometimes, it takes the form like direct contact. Or just even setting the space for others to experience God and find God.
I like that. Do you think ministry has to be work in the church to be counted as ministry?
Not at all, no. So I'm also a chaplain for the local sheriff's department. So oftentimes like that gets called out for like middle of the night for like really bad things.
Yeah.
And that happens like in all types of places, in like jail and side of the road and just... Yeah, like it happens everywhere and anywhere. And that has no actual connection to any church, but definitely his ministry.
That's good. Wow, that's heavy. We'll get into that. But how you mentioned before that you were also in education. Were you a teacher?
I mean, I work at Andrews-ish. So like I'm
ish.
Yeah, I mean like so that's always fun, right? So I'm an employee of the Adventist Church through Michigan Conference. But I work here at Andrews. I'm not technically a staff member, but I'm a staff member.
Huh.
If that makes sense. So it's like
but sure.
It's like one of those like HR definitions.
Okay.
So like Michigan Conference employee, pastor. But here on the campus, I'm chaplain. So I work as a higher ed chaplain. And so that's my educational side of things.
Okay. Did you, when you grew up, did you always know that you wanted to work in ministry somehow in the church?
It's one of those really funny things where I feel like ministry found me more than I found it, in the sense like I didn't want to go into pastoral work, and I kind of went kicking and screaming. Like, I think that's kind of common.
Yeah.
But even as a kid, I remember like we would do these like skits at like school or whatever. They'd be like, "Oh, Prescott, be the pastor in the skit." Or for like the school play, I was like the preacher man.
Wow.
And when I was, we grew up in Georgia, and we moved during the financial crisis elsewhere. And so my home church was like super great. It was like this really like multicultural, like thriving church that we all love to be at. And as I was leaving, one of the elders, he's like, "Hey, we should do an anointing for you." And I'm like 15. I have no idea what that is, right? And I'm like, okay. And so he gathers all the elders, and like they anoint me and say, "You're anointed for ministry. You're gonna do X, Y, and Z in your life." And I was like, did I sign up for that? Right? Like,
can they just do that?
They did that. Super good guy, right? Like, he was a mentor in my life, and he was like, "Yeah, I guess this is the direction you're going in."
Wow.
And then I forgot about it. And so I went to high school, and for me, I went to like two different ones. I went to a really great one, and then a really terrible one. And at the terrible one, It was super religious. It was one of those like very our way or no way for religion. And that was a big turnoff. And so I didn't want anything to do with faith. Fast forward my senior year, God finds me. And then I have this moment where I'm like, okay, God, what am I going to do with my life? And he goes, you're going to go and study theology for undergrad. So I was like, sure, wow. I'll go do it. I came into theology undergrad, and it wasn't like I was wanting to do as a profession. Like, that was not what I wanted to do at all. I was there because I needed to figure out what God was for me, who he was. And so it was really my personal learning. It was like this time of exploration and this time where I got to figure out, oh, God was actually super freeing. He was super kind. He was loving. There's excitement and adventure with God, not very like, it never felt like rules and structure. Yeah. It felt like that was something freeing and exciting. I come to the end of my undergraduate and realize I'm going to graduate with a theology degree and no marketable skills. I was like, well, I need a job. Conferences come and they interview, and I get hired by one, and they're like, we'll send you to seminary. And I thought to myself, that's great. I'll have 2 more years to figure out what I want to do with my life. And I get paid for it. Yeah. So they send me a seminary here at Andrews. And so I go, and my first semester, I'm like, this is not for me. Like, I was like so ready to drop out. I walked around campus talking to different departments. I was like, what else could I do with my life? I didn't ever stop by like the chaplain's office or the career office. Like, I didn't even know those existed. And I feel like I probably should have at the time, but I didn't. Yeah. And so they all were like, just finish the degree. Like, it's free. Just take it and go.
Go where?
So I did that. Like, I finished the degree and, got married, met my wife here. And then, we got married, and, the conference was like, okay, we're going to send you to, middle of like small town Kentucky. You're going to have like one church that's kind of in a city, and then one church that's so far out in the country that one of my members literally had a creek for a driveway that they would drive through to get to their house.
Wow.
And that's what I did for 2.5 years and hated it.
Why?
Because let's put it this way. I had more like conflict management stuff that I had to deal with than actual like helping people find Jesus, and helping people thrive and helping people experience the good about faith. At one point we were sitting in, it was after church, and it was my like a Pathfinder leader and just like another member, and they were yelling at each other, like full-on yelling, spit flying, like vein popping on the head. And I was so done with it, I was not going to engage with it. So I just like, I literally sat there in the sanctuary eating a cookie while I watched them yell at each other.
Okay.
After like 15-20 minutes, they ran out of steam, and I finished my cookie. They walked away, and I was like, all right, we're done. I closed up the church and I went home. And that was like, that was a normal day though. That was like a normal day for me at church.
And they didn't care that you were just there eating a cookie?
No, they were going to yell at each other. Oh. It was so bad that some people, like church of like 35 people attending, at one point they met in 2 separate locations because they didn't want to be with each other. Wow. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. How did you manage that? Like, what do you do?
So I sat down and started my MBA to get out of it. Like, that was my plan. I did what I could, and I started my MBA while I was there, and I was like, well, I'm going to go into the corporate world and just do something else, just anything else.
Do you know what that place looks like now, if they're still arguing with each other?
I've talked to one person that was a member there, and they have since left for a different church that was healthier. Oh. So I honestly don't know.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Wow. Did I make an effort? I made an effort. Did I make a difference? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think some places just might not be open to these differences being made, and that's...
Yeah. And that was actually like, it was super demoralizing as like a young pastor coming out. Cause like you come out with all these expectations and you come out with these, like these hopes and dreams, like doing something good. And I was like, is this all that it was?
Interesting. So after that you left to, where'd you go?
Yeah. So the funny story is, so I'm finishing my MBA. I have like 6 weeks left and I'm looking for jobs, applying. I got hired in corporate world insurance. Not that insurance is like glamorous, but they were going to have, like, the annual bonus was going to be, like, double my current salary, right?
They hired a seminarian for insurance?
So I was finishing my master's of business. Had no, like, prior business experience aside from, like, leading a church, right? And they're like, yeah, let's do that. So it was, like, corporate world. It wasn't, like, selling insurance. It was, like, the corporate office for one of the big, like, nationwide ones in, like, the operations department. So I get hired, and I'm like, awesome. And right about the same time, I get a call from a friend, and they're like, hey, do you want to come and interview at Andrews for a chaplain job? And I'm like, not really. But I was like, you know what? Sure, I'll say yes, because something inside of me was just like, say yes. We go through the process, and my wife and I were both like, yeah, let's go the corporate route. That's better for us. We've seen what church looks like. We don't really want to do that. But we're like praying through it, and we're reading The Circle Maker by Mark Batterson. It's all about like letting God like take the lead, and like He can do amazing things. So we're like, okay, God, we'll pray about it. Hear nothing back from them. We've already made plans to move. We've like driven through the place that we're going to live in. We've seen the houses. We're like, this is so great. And we say like individually, okay, if we don't hear back by like the end of this day, we're just going to go with the corporate route. Well, I'm climbing into bed that night, literally about to turn off the light. My phone rings and they're like, come up here for an interview.
Wow.
And I'm here at Andrews as a chaplain.
That's crazy.
Yep.
Waited till last minute.
Last minute.
I wonder why that is.
It's a God thing. He chuckled. God chuckled. He said, no, Prescott, something different.
Yeah. He has some humor that way.
He does. At least with me.
How do you feel about stepping into, do you feel like that's what you're meant to do?
Honestly, being here has been really amazing. Gotten to do some of the things that I always wanted to do, but didn't know I wanted to do. I've gotten to lean into passions of working with people to help them see life in a different way, to help them thrive. I get to work with different populations that come from so many different backgrounds. And the cool thing is, like, I've gotten to do this in different settings. So I've expanded from just like church based. So I still do some church stuff here at the campus church. Like I do chaplain work for the university. Gotten to do some community work with the sheriff's department, and then like it's been really cool to be able to branch out and do some of the things I never thought I would. But
that's really cool.
It's been really good.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think I will say I've done a little bit of research on you.
That's never a good thing. Yeah.
I found an article where you described yourself as an introvert.
I am.
Or let me see what those words were exactly.
Oh, you're going to read them back to me? That's terrible. That's terrible.
You said you were an outgoing introvert.
Yeah.
What is that? How do you find that is in your experience in ministry? Do you find like it's harder to be an outgoing introvert in a place where it's all about the people?
So I think I've changed a little bit as well.
Okay.
Since like I'm still definitely an introvert. Like I'm not going to get up there and speak. We talked a little bit about this at the beginning. Like I don't travel around and speak. I don't look out for big places to be the center of attention. I still like being around people and making connections.
Yeah.
I like that fast pace where I meet lots of different people, but I don't necessarily want to be the one that's like the center of attention for everything. So I think that's probably the outgoing and the introvert.
Yeah.
I'm also one of those people, like I don't do, like on my off time, it's like me, my family, and maybe a couple of close friends. Like that's what we do. We don't do like big giant gatherings.
From the other experience that you've said, you mentioned that you're also a chaplain for the sheriff's department.
Yeah.
What's been the hardest thing in the line of work that you do in that?
Yeah. So prior to ever coming into like the pastoral world, I always thought that maybe I'd work in like government, had some family that have done, you know, kind of that world. And so I've always been curious. And for me, military never worked out. Like that was something I'd looked into a while ago. And it came to the point a couple of years ago where I said, I'm doing a lot for church and for the university. I'd like to do something faith related, something that I would just do on my own if I were just, you know, had a different career and were a church member sitting in the pews every week. I want to do something that's just my own. And so I was looking around, and this opportunity, a friend of a friend kind of introduced me to it. And they said, hey, you should check it out. I think you have the temperament for it. So I reached out, and with that, you end up doing a lot of like trauma work, specifically with people that have had the worst day of their life. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes you show up in the worst moments. So I mean, a lot of it is telling people that their loved one is dead, sitting with them as they hear that news, right? So you're the person that actually delivers it. And they're never going to remember you or who you are, but they're going to remember exactly what you said. They're going to remember what that moment was like. They're going to remember what they were wearing. They're going to remember probably even the words you said and how that made them feel. But at the same time, even if it's the worst, it can also be like you get to be the one that helps do it in a way that doesn't destroy them. Mm. You get to be there, and it's pretty cool to do that, even though it's like super awful.
Yeah.
So that happens fairly often. I show up at a lot of incidents where it's still ongoing. I think about our campus. A couple of times I've had some incidents that have crossed over, and you show up on scene as things are still very much in progress and you don't know what's happening. And then my favorite part of it is probably the person to person with the deputy. So it's sheriff's department, their deputies, not they don't call them officers, they're deputies.
Mm-hmm.
And so riding along with the deputies, you get to hang out and you talk, and it's a moment where the people that literally like they wear armor because it's a world of like scary and danger. And there are people that always keep their emotional armor up. But if you're the right person at the right time, they'll sometimes let that down.
Mm.
And you can talk to them person to person and just kind of speak into their life. And it's fun because it's a role where you have like a guiding influence and voice, and oftentimes you don't know how impactful it is until later. Someone comes up, be like, "Man, I was on the knife edge of losing it, and you helped me not." And it feels like you make the impact.
Yeah, I don't know how to phrase this question exactly, so I hope you just get what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah.
What do you think the importance is of these people that are in these like times of need in the hardest times of their life? What do you think the importance is of having the ministry or the spiritual side of it at these events?
So the joy is like in many of those events, I don't necessarily like mention the name of Jesus or I mention like very religious things like that rarely comes up. I might pray with someone, like I might do that. If they ask, if they're open, if they have a faith background. But really in that moment, you get to live like in the world of faith, we talk about like Jesus and the incarnation, like coming into flesh. You get to live it out where it's not what you're saying or necessarily like the message you're preaching, but it's who you are. And those are the moments that I think are so, so great about it because it's faith that's rawest. Mm-hmm. Because like if faith hasn't transformed you and you show up in that space, they know, like they feel it. They'll feel like, oh yeah, it's just some dude coming to talk to us. In other moments, they'll be like, man, that was special.
Hmm. That's good. I will say, this is kind of just out of my own curiosity.
Yeah.
How do you feel about those people that go on the streets with their signs and they say, God is the way, and if you don't have it, repent now or you'll die? Like,
yeah, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, as wild as it is, like I think everyone has their own journey, right? So yeah. I mean, I think they're like probably the least effective people in the world to do anything good. But at the same time, I mean, like the was it 4 or 5 years ago, at a concert in Las Vegas, there's a mass shooting and a lot of people lost their lives. Outside there was somebody that was saying like, hey, turn away and repent.
That's helpful.
I mean like, no, well, it was beforehand.
Oh, okay.
So like before the event.
Oh.
At some level, like, was it somebody's last message?
Oh.
Was it an opportunity? Was it like the last warning, or was it just a crazy guy who was standing there who was making an obnoxious fool out of himself?
Mm.
I don't know.
Hmm.
Would I ever stand out with a sign? Yeah, no. Would I tell people to do that? Definitely not.
Huh. Interesting. You've had somewhat of a rocky relationship with ministry in your days. I don't know if you would say the same thing, but that's...
I've gone kicking and screaming every single time.
What are some things that you think could happen to make it not be kicking and screaming?
So I had a talk with a friend recently. I'm not one of those people that's super concerned about changing the institution or trying to like make that like the big grand church, trying to make that incredibly optimal for everyone that works here. Like I've kind of given up on those dreams. I think as like a young pastor in seminary, you're always like, oh yeah, we do this and we can change the system. We can make it, make it so much better. And I kind of stopped focusing on that. And some administrator out there, someone out there is put in that place, is sitting in that seat where they are there to make, make things better for like new pastors or chaplains or whoever it is. But it's not me. I definitely like my place is on the ground with people. It's on the ground doing the stuff, the things that I'm supposed to, like right here at Andrews, with the campus church in the county. Like that's my role. And I'm okay with that. And I think that's been a shift for me because, I mean, when I was younger, I was like, I want to be a career climber. I want to make it, you know? But now I'm very much okay with being where I'm at and living in the moment that I am. And that's like young Presco would be like, who are you? Right. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I don't necessarily think about how I can make it better for like a better system or how I can change that or tweak that. I don't feel the need anymore to try to make it or change things.
Interesting. So when it comes to some ideas that you have to, I guess, make ministry better, I guess, do you think about that at all? Or?
I mean, I think about it in the terms of what I do and what the people around me do.
Yeah.
And I'll say like, yeah, there's always a desire to make it so that we can connect better with others around us. Like I think about our chaplain's office. We're always talking about like how do we reduce the barriers and make it more appealing, more attractive, a better value proposition, so that people will come to us. And then how do we do it so we can like find the people that need us the most and will never come to us? Mm-hmm. Like we're always talking and thinking about that. And not in the way like we need numbers. Like it's not a numbers thing for us. It's one of those where we're always wanting to be serving in the best and the most like I hate to use the effective, right?
Yeah.
And that's like it's so like people say that in like really churchy worlds, like, are you an effective pastor?
Yikes.
And it's always like, do you hit the metrics of like baptisms and tithe? And so like I hate using that term, yeah. Right? So I think all my ideas are centered around like that sphere, rather than like a great program that would be good to roll out for the world, right? So I mean, yeah, I think we've talked about like podcasting. That was one of the things that I was like, yeah, we should start something like a podcast that we could get people connected and just like enter into that digital space here on the campus. And even with that, like somebody was like, hey, do you want to scale this out so that we can do like young adult stories and young adult ministry for the rest of the Adventist Church? I was like, no, I'm okay. Like if it does that, that's not a problem. But I care about like the people here, the ones that I can see, the ones that like I'm supposed to be engaging with. Like I care about that. If it translates to that in the rest of the world, why not? But I don't feel a need to
reach out. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So when it comes to, it sounds like you're not opposed to the ideas themselves. It's just when you try and make it to fulfill some, like a quota or something or a metric.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't live for that. And I think I've come to the point where I can say I don't need to fill quotas or I don't need to hit every metric. I don't feel that pressure. And I think that's why chaplaincy suits me a little bit better than like solely church-based pastoral work. Because in the church-based pastoral work, a lot of times there's a subtle pressure. Like it's never like the driving thing, or it shouldn't be. But there's always a subtle pressure. It's like, do we have enough people in the pews? Do we have enough money coming in? We're caring about the wider institution. Chaplaincy, like you're caring about the person. You're caring about the group of people, and it's people based. And I think that's something that I've grown into and found fits me well. I still care about, you know, managing things, but I don't necessarily want to always have to tick the box for the stakeholder. I care about what matters and getting people connected to God and to faith and to thriving.
I think it's totally okay to not want to feel like you're the person to change the world of ministry. I think that's how it's supposed to be. I don't think it should be like, oh, and I'm going to make all these changes. But I think, is there anything, are there any problems that you've seen that might be worth fixing, even if it's not something that you...
Yeah, actually, thinking through like problems that I've seen. So across the board, young adult drop-off is a thing that happens in church. Mm-hmm. People come to Adventist universities and then will often leave them afterwards and not re-engage with church. They'll not re-engage with wherever they end up. Like, that's normal. It's not just like Adventist. Like, that happens across the board, mm-hmm. no matter what denomination, no matter if they go to Adventist or a public school, or if they're, you know, evangelical or even like different faiths. Mm-hmm. They'll young adult drop off in faith engagement. Like, that's the pivot point. Backing up though, so like I do a lot with working with young adults who take leadership positions in their college years. I mean, that's what I do here, right? Mm-hmm. Those individuals that do that oftentimes are more resilient when it comes to still engaging with faith practices, whether it's inside the church or for themselves. So they'll still have a greater connection to faith and oftentimes to the denomination that they're a part of as is. Okay. And so like that happens because they've taken ownership of it. They've done things. They've continued to engage on their own terms. They've kind of made it their own. But we've noticed like there's a smaller pool of people that want to take those leadership roles and to engage and do things. And like you back that up and there's like a smaller number of people that are, doing like teen leadership stuff for Pathfinders. Mm-hmm. And there's a smaller number who like attend youth and teen Sabbath school. And you back that up and there's like a smaller number of families that have their kids in, like Adventist elementary schools that do, like that get them involved with that like Adventist ecosystem or even any denomination. But again, I'm an Adventist and this is mm-hmm. what I think about. And like you back that up even further and like you see that people, young adults themselves, like if they've left the church, they'll come back and like they'll bring their kids to church and Sabbath school and they'll do the thing. And then once their kids are old enough to go on their own, like the parents disengage and then like the kids watch that. And so like, it's just like this, the chain reaction that I've seen is that if people aren't engaged themselves, like their kids are only going to pick up who their parents are, not mm-hmm. what their parents make them do. I mean, like I took violin as a kid. I hated it. My mom made me do it. And I love my mom. It came to the point where I refused to move the bow. Like I would hold it and my mom would have to move the bow and I would just like move. Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. I don't play violin to this day. I don't touch it. I don't play music. You only pick up who your parents are, not what they make you do. Hmm. My parents aren't musicians. Like they don't love music. It's just something that they made us do because they're like, oh, that's good for his development. Right. And I think that's what so many kids like experience is their parents tack on faith as like one more thing that they do because it's good for you. Hmm. And then if your parents aren't super engaged and then you don't take ownership of it early, right. If you don't do that early in like either Pathfinders or like a youth group or whatever, you're not going to do that later. You're not going to go work at summer camp. You're not going to go and then take faith leadership roles in college. And if you don't do that, when you leave, what's the point of staying? Like, if the church isn't actively a good community for you, if it's not actively working for you or serving you, you're not going to stay and engage with it. Hmm. And so if the piece of like the church isn't super healthy, if it's a church where you like they yell at each other and you just eat cookies, and then right. you've never like decided to take ownership of that faith experience at some level, and then those two pieces are in play, like you're most likely just going to walk, right? Hmm. And arguably, like I think that having a great faith connection makes life so much better. Having a good faith community makes so much better, makes life so much yeah. better. And so for me, like what I'd love to see is strengthening that chain all across the board so that people do engage and they stay engaged. And not just for the sake of growing the organization. Like that's not my driving thing.
Yeah.
But just because it's so much healthier of a life and it creates a better society and community. And then on the flip side, right? Mm. So on the flip side of that, on like the sheriff side, so we'll roll up on like a CPS call. We did a child protective services call at one point. And the dad was like a deadbeat dad. Mm. Terrible situation for the kid. walk into the house. We're there with the child social worker, right? So I'm there with the kid and the social worker, and like I'm overhearing, and like the dad is just like saying, "It's not me. Like I'm the victim here. Like I'm not the one that caused this," or like, you know, like as you can tell, like this house has like complete absence of any sort of like moral like responsibility or anything. And I think that faith and denominational connection and like a good connection to God, like it gives you that grounding so you don't end up in like these really terrible places. And if it's healthy, right? Like there's still some faith communities that, you know, people end up doing stupid stuff. But by and large, like it protects and it creates a good like basis for life.
You said in the beginning about it, around in the beginning of that's not what drives you, the, you know, filling whatever. So what is what drives you in this aspect of?
Yeah, I what drives me is, so that's, it's twofold. So this is going to sound super churchy, and then there's another one that's not going to sound as churchy. But I'm going to start with the really churchy one.
Sure.
And I say this because like some of my friends are going to laugh when I say this, because it sounds a lot like where we were in high school and the type of high school we were in. I feel like oftentimes my faith journey has like rebelled against that super rigid view. But at the same time, I think you can strip away like the crazy rigidity and still find some good. And like at the end of the day, like I actively believe God's going to come back and he's looking for people that can live with him forever. And he cares about his kingdom, and he's wanting to build his kingdom here on this earth, right? We're not escaping earth and then going to heaven and living in this like utopia. No, like God's going to rebuild the kingdom of heaven here on this earth. And he wants that to start now and here. What drives me is letting people see a glimpse of that and see that like, no matter what political system you adhere to, no matter what nation you're a part of, no matter what like race, religion, like whatever that is, like human beings have tainted that and made it so that there is like terrible, like sinful effects in all of that stuff. But the kingdom of heaven exists independent. Like it has no, like it's not tied to a location. It's not tied to a single people group. It's not tied to any of that. And it's this perfect, like amazing place that God says, this is the way to live. I love helping people see the kingdom of heaven, kingdom of God here in real time. Cause like Jesus talks about how it's here, but not yet. It's coming, but it's among us. And I love helping people find it, because in like the simplest of interactions, where you're like, you're sharing of yourself with others, it can be the kingdom of heaven. When you're negotiating peace treaties during the middle of a conflict, it can be the kingdom of heaven. When you're preaching a sermon, it can be the kingdom of heaven, but it's this beautiful place where people are living in harmony with God and doing what he does independent of everything else on earth. And it's an amazing thing. So I love that.
Yeah. I don't think that was too churchy.
Okay, because it sounded churchy to me.
Well, but I think it's in a good way, because I feel like a lot of the churchy phrases that I've heard is not focusing that it's here and now. They just focus like, oh, it's coming soon. Like, get ready for that. Get ready to be taken from the ground. And I don't know. They make it sound a lot scarier. But I think that was a good way to remember that it's here and it's now, but also not yet. So I don't know.
And that's attention, right? So like, yeah, it's here, and the whole idea is like, don't get ready for what's coming. Like,
it's now.
It's now. Like, yeah. It's not about getting your life right so you're in line with what Jesus says, so that you can go and be safe and there's no fire and brimstone. It's getting your life in line with God and living in like alignment with him here, because you're gonna live a better life, and it's the way you should do it. Like it's the good way to, it's the good life, right? It's not that you're like preparing for something else. Like it's God wants you to be in line with him here. And those people that are already in line with him, like they're the ones that are going to live in the kingdom of heaven here and when God returns.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
It is awesome.
So that's what drives me. It's like, yeah, I want people to experience that. I want people to see that.
That's good. I'm surprised that I've never heard of other people involved in ministry phrase it like that. It's always been like the fear factor of, well, if you don't do it now, then you're going to die forever. But it's never like, well, you're not going to live the life that God wanted all along. You know what I'm saying? That's crazy to me.
So I experienced a lot of that fear. I experienced a lot of that, especially in like that high school, right?
Yeah.
So I came from a like super healthy church, didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a social club. Like, there's nothing else that was going on. We just loved hanging out with each other. And then moved to, like, this super rigid, like, fear factor world. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is terrible. And so my journey afterwards has been a lot of, like, figuring out what does it mean to, like, what's actually, like, good with it all? Like, what does it matter, right? Like, I've spent a lot of time, like, thinking about, like, what does the church actually do? Like, why does it matter? Mm-hmm. And, like, that's the best that I've come to. And maybe there's more. Maybe, maybe I haven't gotten it all, but that's where I'm at currently.
If that's enough for you, that's enough.
I think it's still a journey, right? Like, there's still a process to figure out, but that's where I've kind of come to now.
Yeah. A little bit ago, you said how you were kind of describing what makes people leave the church, and that's almost kind of everything that you've been through, kind of. So what made you not leave?
The funny thing is, like, I go into ministry kicking and screaming, mm-hmm. but I think that's one of the biggest things of why I'm still here. Mm-hmm. My natural tendency is, like, on a Saturday morning, I don't want to get up. Like, I have young kids, right? Like, we're up all the time in the middle of the night. I don't want to get up early. Like, I don't want to have to, like, dress up and go, right? Mm-hmm. But it's something that I think my engagement in actually, like, making it my own and doing things and actively, like, being a producer, not just a consumer sitting, that's helped keep me. And I think there's a reason, like, God chuckled and was like, you could go corporate. I'm not going to stop you. Mm. But it's better for you if you do that, because your life's going to be better this way. And, like, looking back on it, the things that I value in my life, where I'm at now, allows me to have those things as well as keeps me grounded in God and faith and Adventist Church and all those things. Whereas I don't know if that would be the case in the other role. Like, not saying it's bad, just for me it wasn't. It wasn't the right way.
It sounds like, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you don't believe that there's just one path or one calling that people can have. Do you feel like that?
So I've also wrestled with the term calling a lot. Mm. So in ministry, like, early on in theology school, they're like, what's your calling? And you're supposed to say something like, you know, I'm called to be a pastor, and I'm here, and yada yada. Like, I feel that my soul was made for the pulpit, right? That's super sarcastic, right? And my early theology professors would, like, totally fail me. But I never felt that I was tied in and locked in, and, like, once you're in, you're in. Like, I've heard people say, once called, always called. Even if you leave pastoral work, like, you were made for it. I was like, I don't necessarily agree with that, because, like, so I know people through no fault of their own, they've gotten fired. I've known people that haven't, like, had the issues, haven't stolen money, haven't been, like, sleeping around, like, they haven't done those things, and the church was like, you know what, we're just going to cut you for whatever circumstances, like, it's time that you walk away, and they haven't been able to get, like, a church job since. Wow. So they're doing other things. I know somebody that they went through undergraduate, they went through masters, they got their doctorate in ministry, they did all that stuff. No one hired them. So they run their own business, and they are the head elder of their local church, and they, like, support mission trips every year, right? Mm. So I think calling is independent of the job. Because, I mean, what happens if you get fired, or if you're, like, the Adventist church closed down? Yeah. Right, does your calling go away, right? Mm. So for me, like, wrestling with that term calling, it's independent of the job, but, like, I feel like my life, like, everyone has a calling, and that's to live out their life in perfect alignment with God, right? Like, you're not going to do it perfectly. Like, God's going to be the one that, like, helps guide you through those, like, mm-hmm. those struggles and those pitfalls, but, like, to live your life in alignment with God, and then to do that in the intersection of, like, the world's greatest needs and the place where God's put passion on your life. Like, that's, for me, like, that's my sense of calling, right? Mm-hmm. I think calling can express itself in church world as a pastor or whatever, but it doesn't have to.
When you think about young Prescott and the little kid that was super excited and wanting to make a difference in ministry, what would you say to that young Prescott, if you could, about their dreams?
You know, I probably wouldn't say anything, because I think that those experiences I went through were exactly what I needed to be here and do what I'm doing now and do it well. Hmm. So this is like, this is more like the leadership side, right? Mm-hmm. So I read an article about the U.S. Navy and how back in the day, the U.S. Navy had a problem where like their young lieutenants would take over ships and they would capsize them. They would like run them into other ships because they were just like, they were young and they didn't know what they were doing. And wow. So the Navy was like, these are billion-dollar boats. We can't do this. Mm-hmm. And so they removed like young leaders from taking like charge of things. And they said, you're going to intern under, you're going to be there, you're going to work your way up. Mm-hmm. And later on they realized, oh, we don't have really great leaders that can take over like command. Like they're shy, mm-hmm. they're skittish, they're not doing these things. And it like the crux of the article was, and the crux of the study was that early leaders should make mistakes. They should get their hands on taking ownership of something as like taking charge of it as soon as they can, because that sets the stage for really good decision making later. And specifically, people that do that through really tough circumstances. Mm. And it's less about the outcome in those, but more that you had that experience. And so for me, going through and going to going from seminary. So in seminary, I said, I want to be in a place that's super urban, tons of young adults, super healthy, get to do all the fun stuff. I want to be an associate. I don't want to be the lead. And if I had gotten all of those things and not gone to church that yelled at each other and had difficulties I had to work through and had to like help them figure out like what does it mean to like be missionally focused and not just like angry. If I hadn't gone through those, I don't know if I would have been here getting to do the stuff I was doing. Because I don't think it would have made me a good leader. Like, not saying that you can't be a good leader through, you know, mentorship and all those, like being under somebody rather than being the lead. But I think early leadership has an incredible value through difficult times.
So you would look back at your life and not even change it?
Probably not.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's big.
Which is really weird for me to say.
No, that's good.
Because for years I was like, oh, I wish I had done something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's important to look back, but also looking to the future. There's a lot of things with AI and how the world is evolving. How would you view that in the aspect of ministry?
So you know I'm a dinosaur, right? Like, I don't have social media.
Wow.
I don't keep up with pop culture.
Yeah.
Like, I am...
You knew about Queen Bee?
And yeah. Beyonce's like 60, right? Like, I don't know any of that. Like, I don't keep up with it, right? Yeah. So for me, like, AI, yeah, that's going to change things and it's going to have an impact in how you do it. But at the end of the day, when it's people connecting with people, like, that's never going to change. When it's helping somebody find the you know... their passion, their purpose, and finding God and direction in life, that's not going to change. I mean, AI might be a part of that. Back in the day when Dwight Nelson did Net 98, that was the big thing. I remember as a kid, so it was before kindergarten for me. So this is going to make Dwight feel really old. So I hope he listens to this because I worked for Dwight for years. But I was like, it was pre-kindergarten. I remember like watching this guy talk on screen and it was the biggest thing because everyone was like, that's live. I was like, wait, that's not like a VHS. Like that's live. Right.
Yeah.
It was such a big deal. Now live TV and like live broadcast, like no one cares.
Yeah.
So, I mean like the packaging of it is always going to change, but like the essence of connecting people to direction and purpose in God, like that's not.
So you wouldn't say to avoid it at all costs. It has no space in ministry.
Has no place. Get rid of it. Yeah, no. It's a thing.
Interesting.
It's just a tool. Just a thing. I'm also not the person that's out there on like the cutting edge to like tell you how to use it and how to do the best of it. Definitely not that guy, but.
And that's okay.
Somebody's out there. They got it.
Interesting, because I've heard a lot of backlash on AI saying how it's not ethical to use it, or it's not, I don't know.
I used to care about all those conversations, and somebody else will figure it out. I don't need to.
That's funny how you just kind of step back and let people do their thing. I think it's an interesting skill to have when you talk about leadership and to know your place.
I've never thought about it in those terms, but as you say that, yeah, know your place. That's That's a good way to put it. Mm. Something I think all my life, I was always looking for more. It's kind of some family programming, right? Mm-hmm. My dad, first generation immigrant, right? Comes mm. and works his way up, spends his time in corporate world and does all of that. And when I, you know, like when I told him that when I was younger, right, I told him, mm-hmm. I was like, maybe I'll join the military. He said, okay, be a general. Mm. And that was like, later on, I told him I was going to theology school and might become a pastor. He's like, good, become the GC president. Right. Like, I love my dad. Like, this is just how we are. It's just like for me, I always saw like working my way up and doing something bigger is always better, broader, more mm-hmm. responsibilities. And I have, yeah, if you're not there, you're not there. Focus on where you are. And the people that end up there are either super career climbers that like network like crazy and spend all the effort to get there, mm-hmm. or they're the ones that do a good job and somebody along the way, they made a connection and says, you'd be a good person, come on up. Hmm. And if they're not ever up on that level, that's okay too.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think also having a family has changed that a little bit. Cause I see my kids, right? Like they're young. And seeing them play and seeing them experience life, like it's great. And I realized like 18 years goes by quick. Mm. It's like it's a blink of an eye. Mm. And so I'm not wanting to waste it.
Yeah.
Right now is where I am. Mm. Right here.
That's good. You don't wish those 18 years would go faster?
No. My wife and I, we've decided to lean into the young years, like even if it's sleepless, even if it's mm-hmm. like temper tantrums over things, like we've decided to lean into those because every day's a gift, mm-hmm. even those moments, and it goes by quick. And one day when we're old and they're all gone, we're going to be like, we wish we had those days back.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a big thing that you said about being in the moment, because as you said, if you're always focused on the next step and the bigger position, the raise, then you're not living who you are. And I think that's important, especially for leaders. I think as you've stressed the importance of leaders, I think some of the best leaders that I've ever seen are the people that know where they're supposed to be, or I guess know what's not for them. Or they start to push other people to fill the need instead of thinking that they're the need themselves. And I think that's a big thing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you guys so much for watching. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to support this podcast, feel free to like, subscribe, and comment. Let us know what you think. Did you like the conversation? Is there someone that you would want to hear more about their story and their passion for ministry? Let us know in the comments. Thanks again for watching. We'll see you next time.